This is an interview that's been in the works for a while. Floyd Irons told me he was writing a book, and I said, when you get close to finishing that book, we got to sit down, we got to talk. And the truth is, I could probably talk to Floyd Irons for several hours. We could do one of those Joe Rogan, like, four-hour interviews if we all had the time, because we could talk to Floyd about his career, but also about, you know, the city and what's changed in St. Louis. I didn't realize until doing a little bit of research, I knew Floyd had gone to Vachon High School before he became the legendary basketball coach, but I didn't realize he was the St. Louis Post-Dispatch Scholar Athlete of the Year back in the day, ended up at Vachon. His first coaching job at Vachon was actually coaching soccer. That was before he got the basketball gig and the legend began, and certainly over the years, nobody has been more successful, arguably, in any sport in the state of Missouri. I'm sure Webb City Football or a couple of other programs that will come to mind. But Vachon basketball, it became a national brand. You'd pick up USA Today, and there's the V, Vachon, ranked nationally. And they would play all over the U.S. And Floyd was that coach for 32 years. His son Tony is now coaching at Vachon, and they're winning state titles again. And we talk about it during the interview that Tony is very different than his dad, very low-key. Let's be honest. Floyd never avoided either controversy or confrontation. And we get into all of that. Any regrets, especially with the book coming out? What is it that's in the book? Is it everything? Made some enemies with his style. And he sort of explains that, and it has a little bit of a Tony La Russa vibe in that whatever he could do to get in somebody else's head, he would do it if it meant they were going to win that game. Wasn't perfect, doesn't claim to be. And the book will also address his legal problems. You know, there was, it ended up being a federal case involving mortgages and wire fraud and some homes that were purchased, and Floyd was in the middle of that, ended up going to jail. And he says he has harbors no ill will to the people he was involved with, how it all went down. It always fascinated me that he had a federal case against him, but part of the settlement was to work with Misha on some recruiting violations and whether they could take away some state titles. I still don't understand how that connects. A federal case somehow then needs details that involves a Misha state title. It's so bizarre. But this is a lengthy interview, and appreciate Floyd taking the time. All things Vachon, Floyd Irons, controversy over the years, highs, the lows. Hopefully you'll enjoy this discussion, because I really enjoyed it. It was part of our legend series at KTRS, myself, Brendan Weesey, sitting there with Floyd, and then we went a little overtime on the podcast side to kind of get in more into the book, into detail about that. So Floyd Irons is our guest. Our conversation is presented by Marie Davila Senior Living. They're located at the corner of Clayton and Weidman Road. Beautiful campus in West County. So if you're looking for your next stop in retirement, villa estates, maybe it's for mom or dad or an aunt or an uncle, assisted living, all of your retirement needs under one roof, mariedavila.com. Take a virtual tour, MarieDeVilla. That's mariedavila.com. Triad Bank, St. Louis-based bank since 2005. You're starting to hear a lot more about Triad Bank. It's not just because of the service they provide, they're small business owners that they work directly with, but it's the personal service you get. If it's just checking, savings, you walk into the lobby and folks are actually there and folks are actually friendly. It's just the way it ought to be when you're doing banking. It shouldn't be so impersonable. Impersonal. What's that word, Martin? Impersonal. We'll fix that in post. But Triad Bank is just a great group of people. And if you want to check them out, stop by. It's on Clayton Road in Frontenac, and also on the web. It's triadbanking.com. And, of course, Appliance Discounters, theappliancediscounters.com is their website. And here's the deal. When the other guys are telling you it's going to be a month, they'll get you that appliance. You don't need to wait that long. Things are difficult enough. How about 2 or 3 days? Have that appliance delivered directly to you. That's the benefit of having a 40,000-square-foot warehouse in downtown St. Louis, storing up all those great GE products, General Electric. So they have it handy. They'll get it delivered to you. It's part of the great service at Appliance Discounters. GE rebates in stock. What more do you want? Make sure Your life is hassle-free. Get the GE products from Appliance Discounters. Any of their showrooms or online at all times, theappliancediscounters.com. And now, our conversation with Floyd Irons.
You are writing a book about your life.
Well,
is everything in it?
Funny you ask me that. my new daughter-in-law told me that, did you put everything you want in it? Because people will probably stop talking to her and Tony. They might have to move out of town once they read it. No.
So a few things will be left.
I've had a chance to really put a lot of things in it to reflect on my career, my years as a high school basketball player, a coach, mentor and whatever, and, things that I actually had to endure or run into, more so when I was coaching than I am now.
When Joe Buck wrote a book, he said, I'm writing this because, he said, I'm doing it for me, first of all. There's things I just want to get out there. But also, he said, people don't really know me. They think they do. And I think people who have been in the spotlight, and you certainly have for decades, and you've got your enemies, you know that.
Oh, you've got your
supporters.
No doubt.
But do you feel in writing the book, part of that is people don't really get me, or they've never really understood me. Is that part of the motivation?
Well, yes, that's part of the motivation. And some part of it is the fact that, I've had people tell me over and over, hey, man, you got a story to tell. It might not reflect everything you've done, or it might hit some people the wrong way, but again, they keep saying you got a story to tell. So once they kept telling it over and over, I say, hey, maybe I do have a story to tell. Maybe there's some things out there that I can say or do that can maybe help somebody, or to get people to understand me a little bit more about the things I did and the methods to my madness.
Any regrets? Do you reference any mistakes you made will you get into that too? Any mistakes?
Well, I there's a number of mistakes I made, and I do get into it and try to get in as much detail as possible in the book. In anything, you have some regrets. You think that you can turn the table back, or you can get the time back again. Would you have done certain things different? But one thing that I really wanted to reflect in the fact of the matter is that I thought that, I lived a dream. I was able to do through basketball a number of things that I always wanted to do, and I felt like, if I died tomorrow, would I regret it? I said no, because I actually did some of the things that I dreamed about doing that I wanted to do, and I wanted to make an impact. And in some ways, I feel I did. And for instance, my son, there are things that some of the mistakes I made, if nothing else, might help him in his career. That, he won't be able to be as vulnerable to some of the things that I was vulnerable to, and maybe not have to deal with some of the things because, he has some more insight or some foresight.
And Tony Irons takes the job at Vachon, which is great for your legacy. It's fun to see an Irons name, and I've gotten to know Tony pretty well. I'm not positive he's your son. He's so low key. He doesn't stir it up. Brendan, have you heard of Tony Irons' controversy ever? No. I wondered if you ever said to him, "Don't go there just yet," or like to follow in your footsteps. Mm-hmm. That's a tough spot to fall into.
Well, we had a long conversation about that, and he was very reluctant at first to going into it. But I kept, I ensured him that, my mistakes does not have to necessarily be his mistakes. But, and they said, we are our keepers. Sometimes your sons have to, or sons have to deal with some of the things that you might not want them to deal with because of the dad. But I thought that if he wanted to get into coaching, he's not going to be able to. There are going to be some controversy. There are going to be some things that you got to deal with. His personality is more like his mom, more laid back.
I would say thank God, but that's disrespectful.
Well,
no, I'm kidding.
No, I don't think it's. But his whole persona, his whole personality is I would say more like his mom. And if there's a controversy, he would definitely if he could, he would run away from him. He's not one that's going to totally get out front. But he doesn't mind getting out front. I'm more of a risk taker, and he and his mom are not more of a risk taker. But we balance, you know, it's been able to balance off a lot within our lives. So with that in mind, you know, he has a tremendous future. I hope that if he gets the opportunity, and I think he should get the opportunity, to jump at the next level if that presents itself. He's done more than what I really expected or really envisioned him doing at Vashon during this particular time, and he's done a tremendous job. He's a good mentor to the kids, and he works hard not only on the court, he works hard off the court to try to get them placed in positions that they can be productive in life.
St. Louis Post-Dispatch Scholar Athlete of the Year, 1966, if I'm not mistaken, would be
67.
I'm sorry. 1967, Scholar Athlete at Vashon High School. You go to Langston University in Oklahoma, and you come back to teach at Vashon. Give me an idea when you came back what your vision or dream was. You were going to teach social studies, and okay. did you always say, "Hey, I'm going to be the basketball coach," or did you say, "I'm just want to help kids learn"?
Well, you know, I really didn't get into coaching or think about coming back. Well, I didn't think about coming back to Vashon when I was in college. My sophomore year in college, my fraternity asked me would I coach the intramural team. So, you know, I thought it was something to do, you know, during pass the time away and give me something to do. And I never thought about getting into coaching. I hadn't thought about getting into coaching. So I did that for the year. I coached the intramural team, and I kind of liked it. My junior year, I coached, and I realized, hey, professional basketball is not going to be in my life anytime soon. But I wanted to stay around. I enjoyed the game, and I wanted to find out how can I, you know, stay in this game and make a niche. So when I came back, when I graduated from Langston, my intent was to go to University of Oklahoma because I accepted a fellowship, and I was going to get my PhD in urban planning. Or get my master's in urban planning and then go from there and accept the fellowship. So when I came home for the summer, that was my route to go back to Oklahoma in September to go to University of Oklahoma. But I ran into a guy by the name of Ron Coleman. And Ron Coleman at the time was coaching at Vashon. And he had taken over the job, had just won a state title, and had taken over the job from my coach, which is George Cross. And we got to hanging out all summer, doing some things, playing ball with the kids in the gym. And he said to me, he said, "Hey, man, you know, I don't know how long I'm going to be in this thing, you know, and it'd be a good opportunity for you if you're a homegrown kid, went to Vashon to stay around." So I decided to put an application in, and lo and behold, you know, I was assigned to Vashon as a social studies teacher. My first, but they didn't have a coaching job. They didn't have a basketball job because Marvin Neals, I don't know if you
Soldan, no. legendary.
Soldan,
yeah,
legendary,
yeah.
Marvin Neals, excuse me. Soldan, Marvin Neals was the assistant coach at the time.
Ed Vashon. Before he went to Soldan. And Troy Taylor and company,
and
all
Troy
those
Troy Taylor
yeah.
and company, and all those. So you remember that. So, but the deal is, when Ron and told me to stay around, the athletic director, they wanted to keep me on. They wanted to give me some extra, you know, give me a little, to put some little money in my pocket. So my first coaching job at Vashon was soccer.
Floyd Irons, legendary soccer coach. This is why we do these things. We had no idea.
I had no idea. It was a soccer crowd.
What did you know about soccer?
I knew how to spell it.
Well, that counts.
And that was the extent of it. The kids taught me more, and I did more research on it and did some things. But, you know, being an athlete, you know, it wasn't difficult to get out there and try things with them. But, you know, in all the coaches, I would always never forget that experience because, you know, those kids taught me more about the field of coaching than the years that I did as a basketball coach.
And basketball started in 74, right?
Right. Your first year. My really first year was 72 because that next year I took over as the B team coach, they called it.
And
the,
okay.
And then Ron left in actually, so I did it for 2 years. So and Ron left in 74. That's when I took over the job in 74, and Marvin went to Soldan.
Soldan.
So those, you know, in a nutshell, that was what I did.
Martin Kilquin, Brendan Wiese, our KTRS Legend Series with Floyd Irons, Vachon basketball legendary coach, 74 to 2006.
Right.
9 state titles.
10.
10, okay. Well, Misha took some one, I just took another
Misha's
one.
So, hey, well, you know, that's
so 10 total.
And in the Vachon world, we still talk about the 10. You know, you can't take it away from out of the memory, so.
Well, let me ask you that. If I sum it up, and you tell me if this is fair, you wanted Vachon basketball to be great, and you may have ruffled some feathers along the way.
No doubt.
But you wanted people to recognize the kids in the city. You wanted St. Louis to be on the map for basketball. You wanted the public high league, and now other your public high league had rivals too. But you were unapologetic, like, I'm going to make this team so damn good. Everyone will notice us, and these kids will get noticed. And your hope was that that would lead to great things for them too. Like, you were going to do it your way. Is that fair? Like, you wanted?
That's fair, and probably more than fair, because the deal is when I took over the job, my intent was to make Vachon a household name. I wanted to make it a household name. I wanted to be something that kids could be proud of, something that the community can be proud of, something that those kids can use as a springboard to go on to bigger and better things. Also, I didn't know that by establishing a program and making it one that people could totally recognize, not only in the city, the state, but in the country, you know, I didn't realize at the time that it was going to be the savior, part of the savior of Vachon. You know, I did want it for it to be the window that people could look through to see that, you know, there's a lot of other things going on at Vachon. Kids are going doing this. Kids are going to school.
To shine the light on the school as a whole.
But shine the light on the school as a whole. Not knowing that shining that light on the school as a whole, we were able to survive being what they call defunct or losing
or
the school.
Or like a magnet school.
Like a magnet school to be going all together. So, and ended up losing the physical building on Cass and Bale, I mean Grand and Bale, and getting a new facility right there on Cass, 34-5. That was Bale, but 30-35 Cass, getting that whole new facilities. There still needs some things to be done, but you know, that was a start, and that helped. So, you know, the principal at the time, when he talked to me and he said, "Hey man, we gotta make it a program where if they're talking about closing us, it'd be so difficult that people will rally around, that will fight for it," and we were able to do that. You know, and I don't take total credit for that, but you know, there are a number of people that I can, you know, a few people I can mention who were very instrumental in helping me get that done.
First state title, 83. Believe. And are we talking shotgun, pistol, Ramon,
yes,
Trice, Altonio,
yes,
Campbell?
Campbell.
I mean, these are kids that
Jonas
played on the Zips.
Cody.
I'm
Jonas
really going,
Cody,
way back.
Going way back.
The Zips.
With the Zips, Jonas Cody, and then probably the high point of my life in terms of, you know, after 10 years, I decided to go back to school and get my master's. I started in 82. See, a lot of people don't realize I started working on my master's in 82. It took me a year to get it. I got the master's in August. We won the state title in March. I got my master's in August of 83. And in December of 83, and on the 19th, my son was born. So that would be a year I wouldn't ever forget.
Wow, master's, state title.
So I was all over the place.
And Tony.
And so I contribute that to the kids that I had. So how is it? You know, I can't forget that first title.
And when it started going, Vachon becomes a thing. Anthony Bonner comes later. Over the years, so many great players and great names. What was it like when it became a thing? Like, you'd been 74 to 83. There's a little bit of a buildup. You paid your dues before Vachon was a household name. Give me an idea, though. Do you start hearing from John Thompson? You start seeing these coaches in your building, at your games, at your practice. At its peak, what was it like with the attention you guys were getting?
Well, it was a roller coaster. You know, it was a roller coaster. It was a situation where I had to decide, you know, if this is what I wanted to do. I was offered a couple of positions at the time to go in as an assistant. Sometimes I think about it, should I have gone that route?
Everyone like at the collegiate level, you
at the,
mean?
At the collegiate level. When it was that it became a situation where part of my biggest job was to get my kids to understand this is not automatic. I couldn't, you know, get into a situation where I got to relax. You know, when you're on top, you got to try to do everything you can to stay on top. Community had begun to take things for granted that this is going to happen every year, and that this can happen every year, and you know, even my brother start planning his vacation around the state time, and so you know, you deal with all that, but you know, more, and you're an athlete, you've been around. It's not easy. It's not something that happens automatically. It takes a lot of work. And the good thing about it too, it takes that. You got to get kids to buy in. And I think one of the strong points of our program or myself was to get kids to buy into what you really believe and what could really, really happen. And once kids understand you have their best interest at heart, you know, many of them will walk on water for you. And I didn't ask them to do anything that I was not willing to go out and do. And I had three little simple deals that I did with them all the time. I talked to them all the time about, and I read a book where Malcolm X once said that time, he couldn't understand why people didn't have watches. Whenever he saw somebody with a watch, he didn't figure that, you know, they really was that important, or they don't think the time was important. So, but, you know, I told my kids all the time, time's important to me. You know, if you're going to do something, be somewhere at a certain time, and you was teasing me about being here, so so it's ingrained.
I just saying over. By the way, Floyd referred to me as an athlete. I am going to clip that off and save that forever.
Well, you went to CBC, though. You know, you are at
well,
CBC.
Brendan and I both
did.
So we're team. This is an intervention. We're teaming up on you. Remember that time where you and Bobby McCormick. Were you rival? Do you laugh about it now? Do you still not like each other? Give us an idea at the height of that, what it was like.
Well, you know, it's the fact that I guess a lot of the antics and some of the things that I did at that particular time, I felt like if I can get you start thinking about me mentally, physically, the other part is going to be easy. And I wanted to, you know, I guess people took it the wrong way. And when I did certain things on a court or with me and you out there on the court, and I might do something and you might not like or this, that, and the other. When I left the arena, it was over with me. But I found out that that's not true. You know, I know that wasn't true with everybody. And
so you're saying
it
wasn't personal. It was like there might be some gamesmanship going on.
And that's using a term that you have that was games. I felt like it was gamesmanship. You know, like I always said, there's methods to my madness. You know, the warm-ups that we came out in, the way we warmed up. You know, I saw the zips. You know, we had kids from the zips, and I felt like
for people who don't know, this was a St. Louis All-Star team, like a select of the
select of the
and
select.
Also had the skill set like the Globetrotters. I remember being like a grade school, early high school kid. You'd see the zips, and they had it down. I mean, they were that
well,
was
you know,
and Campbell and Trice were guys that played for Vershawn and the Zips,
and they were staunch players for the Zips. And I took the warm up, and I took a lot of care or I would say. I paid a lot of attention to presenting that warm up that we would come out in, because I felt like if I can get the other team to turn around to watch what we're doing or to concentrate on what we're doing, part of the battle. And you know, again, like I said, that was a method to my man. Part of the battle was won, that they were concentrating on us instead of concentrating on what they did. I took not pleasure, but I took a lot. And what
that's
I
probably Bobby Mack calling
Bobby
you right
Mack.
Now.
Sure, wanting
to meet, what it is. Meet for lunch. Mack. But have you guys ever been able to bury the hatchet at all? I'm wondering because, and Brendan, you know, at the height of that thing, you were probably, when you were at CBC, Vashon was still riding high.
I was at CBC, and that was where when Larry and the crew won it in 97. And then 2 years later, which would have been my senior year, I remember being at UMSL during the
– Well, the Ryan Johnson game.
It was the Ryan Johnson sectional. Game. I guess would that have been sectionals or what did that Floyd would that have
a
been state quarterfinals?
That was state quarterfinals.
Yeah,
that
trip
was
to state, and Ryan Johnson had a hell of a game.
He did,
but Vashon won.
Game. And you know what? In that game, ironically, Joey Shelton was a senior, and Ryan Johnson I think was a junior at the time. And Ryan Johnson, we called timeout with maybe 3 seconds to go in the game, and Ryan Johnson could ice the game at the free throw line. He had a one.
Remember that.
He had a 1-1, and Joel Shelton came to the bench and he said, "Coach, all I want to say is, everybody make sure we get this rebound. Ryan Johnson is going to miss the front end of the 1-1." I said, "Joey, I said, but if he doesn't, these are things that we get used to. Coach, believe me." He said, "I know him. He goes with my niece." So what did that have to do with
right.
with Ryan? Really, he said, "I know him. He's going to miss this." And so, lo and behold, he gets there, and Ryan puts it up. We miss. He missed. We grabbed a rebound and was fouled, and the rest was history. We went on to win the state. Now, and I felt like they were unfortunate. We had to run into each other
right.
at the quarterfinal, the game. And I've met Bobby on a couple occasions, in the state tournament, and I had felt I made it a point that I really didn't want to play many teams that I'm going to see in the state, but one time, and that's when we had to play them. I wouldn't, it wasn't that I would schedule them or they would that they would schedule me, but that was a part of my situation that I was going to find the best competition I could for my kids to get prepared for the state title or state run, but didn't necessarily have to play. And it helped me out because the teams like the CBCs, the team like the DeSmiths, the teams like, those teams who were perennials wouldn't play me anyway.
Did it mean more for you to – I should say Ryan Johnson, by the way, terrific coach now.
Terrific
Cardinal
coach
Ritter,
now.
Great
doing
kid.
Great job.
I call him a kid. Everybody's a kid
yeah,
to me now.
Yeah, he's a kid. He's still a kid. All right. Welcome to the club.
Terrific kid. Well, the 99 began another run where you guys started winning state every year again. Can you narrow it down? Best player you ever coached?
I won't do it.
Best team?
I might narrow it down one of the best teams. And naturally, I would always say my best team was my 1983 team.
Antonio Campbell went to Kansas?
Kansas.
Right.
And Trice ended up going to Fresno State but coming back. Going to St. Louis U, but that's definitely one of the best teams because it was a fun, total fun year. That was the first. No one expected us to advance and to win a state title. We ended up winning it. We beat a Van Horn team who was 30-0 at the time, and they came in at one of our practice sessions right after we had won the semifinal game, and we all we have practice sessions. One team comes in, the other team will wait outside in the practice gym until Van Horn decides they're going to come in and sit around where we were practicing and looking at us like, you mean tell me these kids made it and this, but our kids took offense of it and really showed it on the court.
What was the gym like on those Friday nights, packed house?
Goodness.
I mean, and you're walking in, I mean, you were a rock star. Then those games were packed. And crazy, and I mean
hot.
Yeah, that's right. I always felt like you guys probably turned the heat up a little bit too.
It was
a bit,
and
how much fun was that?
But we practiced in it all the time, so we didn't have a problem with it. Our kids didn't have a problem with it, and I would wait until the other teams get ready to come out and warm up, and I had two kids, my two managers. They knew before I even had to tell them. I wanted them to go up and shut the windows. So,
I'm sure you did.
Well, Again, I was a part of.
Hey,
was,
whatever it took.
I was a part of something. Whatever it took, and we shut the windows. And
Hayden Fry at Iowa would paint the locker room pink. Whatever. This is a little bit. I mean, La Russa was like, whatever I can do, if I can get in their head a little bit.
Yes.
And when the game's over, I'm not mad at anybody. I'm just going to win that game. But you did mention DeSmet. I've always wondered about that one. The year at State, you blew them out and just, I think it was like 80-20 or something. Any regrets about that one?
Yes. Yeah. Well, it was some regrets, you know. And there are some things that went on that people really didn't realize that, you know, I took offense to. And Bob Steiner and I, right before we were doing the State run, you know, Bob and I had become, you know, somewhat, I would say, friends. You know, he might not have realized it, but I was, you know, I felt like he was a pretty nice, decent guy.
Very decent guy.
So he and I went to scout two teams together. We rode to Sedalia together and to scout the team. He was going to play in the quarterfinal, no, in the semifinal game, and I scouted the team. I was going to play in the semifinal. One of us was going to play that team. So, and on the way back, you know, we got a chance to talk about a lot of things. And I remember going on DJ's show. DJ called me while I was on the road, and he and I was talking to Bob. You know, he talked to Bob Stein. He talked to me. And Bob ended up winning his semifinal game, and I ended up winning my semifinal game. And, when we came out to warm up, you know, DeSmet, you know, I love the DeSmet crowd. I really did like the crowd because it kind of got the juices flowing in me. You know, I remember the time my son was on the bench and I was going to do something. Bob Steiner, Dale Bergman had one of his players, and I knew it was staged to act like they had lost a contact lens. And I went down and I started looking on the floor to try to help him find. But I kind of remembered. I said, this kid doesn't wear contact lens. So I got up and did this. So when I got up and did this, like, I'm not looking for no contact lens. The crowd started roaring from this man, sit down floor, and they got the clapping, you know, boom, boom. And my son, I thought that was the funniest thing in the world. He was sitting on the bench. He said, Dad, they call you floor and sit down floor. But
why the game was standard, then it's weird to hear the backstory. It's interesting because obviously you guys were friendly.
Well, yeah.
I would think even more likely than not to run it up.
But let me tell you what happened to a lot of people. I don't think that they took offense or they even really recognized what was going on because I think this because of this Mets fans and the Mets kids, they you know, they had a lot of antics. They did a few things. If they found out who your name was, you know, they put it in your chant. And I don't think they made it, they had anything bad about it, and you know, no offense about it. But the deal is, when we ran out, the mascot for this Met decided he was going to run out after we ran out. And when he ran out in a gorilla suit. Had a gorilla suit on. Well, I had seen that gorilla suit before. My players had not. But I had seen that kid do it before when Chaminade played to Smet, and I went to scout the team, and I saw the kid come out, and he was in a gorilla suit. Well, I looked on the floor, and the only team that had black players was Chaminade. So I asked the AD at the Smet, I said, what is the significance of that gorilla? I thought you all are Trojans. He said, well, you know, these are kids, and they do this, that, and the other. I said, I tell you what, if we ever play this Met, please do not let that kid, because that's, I look at it as being offensive, and I'm sure my players going to look at it as being offensive. So I hope that we don't have to go through that.
This is in advance of the State matchup, right?
This was really in advance of the State game that we played.
Right.
This was,
and it may have been an homage at the time to, like, the Phoenix Gorilla was a popular mascot, but you said, hey, let's not have it
in one of our
games.
You know, that's not even, you know. And you know, people are sensitive. People, you know, at the time, I'm looking at it, I'm saying, well, what's the significance of it? Why would you? But when, and then I walked to Bob Steiner when the kid came out. I said, Bob, you know, you need to tell that kid to go in, because Jimmy McKinney came to me and he said, Coach, are you looking at this? I said, yeah, I see it, Jimmy. I said, you know, you just concentrate. I'll take care of this. You concentrate on playing the game and doing whatever you can. He was saying, you know, that's not right. So when I talked to Bob, when I went to Bob, and I know Bob's, and now he's in the moment and getting ready for the game and this, that, and the other. So I ended up going to the one of the officials, referees.
Misha. Right.
And I'll call his name in a minute, but I went to him, and he told me, don't worry about that. We can't control that, and you just concentrate. I said, I'll tell you what. If you can't control, and I told Bob, I got both of them together, if you can't control this guy going off the court and not wearing a gorilla suit, I'm not going to be able to control what's going to happen with my kids in the game. Because now you're giving them, you know, added incentive.
You were ticked off, and you were.
Well, I was not ticked off. I said I'm pissed off.
Right, and you're.
That's the political word for it. I know it. I was steaming. So whatever happened. You know, and
at that point, you don't care. You're like, we're going to go out and win, and we're going to win big.
And it just so happened that at halftime, we were up by maybe 10 points. But at halftime, Earl Austin came into our locker room and said, Coach, I'm sure you're going to enjoy what just happened. I said, what do you mean? He said, Tony Irons' team, Lutheran North, has just beaten the team that they're going to play for the quarterfinal game. They play for the quarterfinal game, and they will be up here next week playing in the state title. So I turn around because Tony is friends with Jimmy and all of them and say, hey, Tony and them are coming up here next week to play. I said, you know, let's just take care of what we got to do. And the rest was history. And, you know, I couldn't stop the onslaught. People might have thought I felt bad for Bob. I felt bad for the kids on this Met team. The outcome, you know, people took it the wrong way. They thought I was trying to, but I could not. You know, we peaked at that. We played the best, probably the best half that I've ever seen one of my teams play, and it was just flawless. You know, I didn't have to really coach. I could just everything they did or what we were doing culminated all in that one half. You know, so. You know, they were hitting shots that, you know, I guess they got in the zone. And I felt, you know, I just felt bad for Bob because there was nothing he would have been able to do other than maybe pulling his team off the court and say, hey, it's over with.
Floyd Irons, our guest here, Martin Kilquin, Brendan Wiese, our St. Louis sports legends. And you and I mean, and Brendan, we could talk for hours, and I would love to talk about, you know, the city and where we're headed and your view on that. Somebody who's from here, that's a whole nother probably half-hour discussion. Mm-hmm. You are writing a book. When's it coming out? When can people get it?
Well, we were supposed to have it out by March Madness of this year. Ran into some glitches, you know, and publishing situations. And that hopefully it'll get out, if not by the end of this summer, you know, by the beginning of the basketball season.
What's it called? Do we have a title? Do we have a working title?
We have two working titles. One is that we decided on, I guess.
Pissed Off, the Floyd Irons story.
No, it's not Pissed Off. The one I had with, you know, and I'm really fighting for is called Hard Court.
Hard Court.
You know, different between court on the court and in court.
Will you? Now you had legal troubles. Is that in the book?
No doubt.
Okay. And you came back, and again, this is a whole nother show probably, but you seem to come back from that at peace. Is that right?
No doubt.
You dealt with it?
I dealt with it. And I felt like God, you know, forgave me or forgive me. And all I needed to do was forgive myself. I don't blame anybody but myself. You know, I was a grown man when the things happened, and it was, you know, with this, as the old saying, the ignorance of the law is no excuse, and that's no doubt the deal. That's the truth. You know, I run in, I see co-defendants. I've seen several, you know, the co-defendants. Don't have any animosity about them. But, you know, I hope that whatever happened on that side would definitely help my son when if anything comes to his way.
You referenced this earlier, your daughter-in-law saying, you know, about the book you put it. Did your wife, did Tony, nobody tried to stop you from writing the book, right?
No.
They're
no.
all
they were quite encouraging. I let them read some of it or most of it. They were being in my ghostwriter had them. They interviewed them. They had a chance to, in this segment, talk about some of the things that, you know, was important to them. So, you know, and they've been able to read some of the excerpts from the book. And some they agree with and some they cringe about because they're saying, you know, I don't think you should mention this and definitely any names, but, you know, there's some in the book where I mention some names and then there's some I don't reference to the person. Well, I don't reference to the name, but I reference to the personalities that I had to deal with in that situation. You know, those that, you know, always felt that the knife was in my back.
Well, they were probably, and it's interesting to me because, you know, legal trouble is one thing. But Misha is a different thing. But yet your case kind of – they wrapped them together, right? Wasn't
right.
part of the – I never understood this. So you had the legal issues. People can look it up, but it involved mortgages
yes.
and things like that. But then part of the agreement or settlement involved Misha investigating whether you had illegal players. I thought, what does one have to do with the – I never understood that.
I didn't either. I asked the federal government – well, I asked the representatives of the federal government – who was investigating the situation, I asked them in a meeting, I said, now, when does the federal government get involved in basketball, high
state
school?
State titles.
State
like
titles,
what?
High school basketball. Well, the answer that I was given, you know, I still can't understand, the answer I was given that In their investigation of me for 2 years, there were some things they found out or they were privy to that they felt that they were obligated to tell the state Misha. So I'm saying, I said, well, so the federal government works for Misha.
I still don't get it.
But that's what, you know, that's what I was told.
Right.
That, so they felt like they had to tell Misha to give Misha an opportunity to investigate and do whatever they were going.
And so eventually they said you had some illegal players. My question would be this, and I'm not abdicating anyone who does it, but it's sort of like baseball where they say they all do a little something on the baseball. They all do something. Mm-hmm. Are there kids who say, I want to play for Vershawn. I want to be on the best team. I want Floyd to be my coach, and my grandma lives over there. I'm going to live with her for a year or whatever. How prevalent is it? In other words, I doubt Vashon was the only school who had kids outside their district. I'm not saying that's right or wrong, but am I crazy here, or is it happening all over the place?
You know, it happens all over the place. And the fact of the matter is that, you know, it depends on who's doing it. I felt that the DSEG program, that the voluntary DSEG program, was nothing but a glorified way for county schools to recruit city kids. And I felt like, well, they gave me the blueprint. They gave us the blueprint to say, oh, if you can go out and if you can come in the city and you can cipher out off the best kids under this, quote, DSEG, volunteer DSEG model, then why can't I go out and look at kids and try to let my program entice them to come in.
So pick your school. If you're going to go out to the county, you could come to Vashon just as easily. If you're going to pick your school.
If you're going to pick your school.
Now, but
I knew, deep down in my heart, nothing. I knew that white kids in droves were not going to come to the St. Louis public schools. But I knew that whatever it is, that a number of kids who maybe felt like this was the ice water outside of the St. Louis Public School was a lot more colder than the ice water at Vashon, that they were going to jump at the opportunity. Now, with that said, is that the coaches out there had to be salivating, not only getting athletes, but getting financial support whereby you can build all these new schools out in the county that we couldn't. And then you're leaving the city, and in the city, our situations are demolished to being, you know, devastated. And who would want to come there?
So was DSAG well-intentioned but poorly executed, or just never, like, and then the sports is sort of a byproduct of DSAG. It wasn't the intention, like, hey, let's get kids out to the county so they can play basketball, but it was happening in part because of that. Do you think it was a well-intentioned policy and it just didn't work?
It just didn't work. And I thought it was, for the intent was probably genuine in the fact that, hey, because our kids are not getting the so-called equal opportunity, that this is the way for them to get a better chance or a better lease on life, to a better opportunity education-wise to go. So, you know, there are a number of good reasons for it, but the I want to say that in theory, it probably was a good idea, but in practice it wasn't. And I never felt like because I sit next to Mark Kilcoin, that I'm gonna get a better education or a better look on life than sitting next to my own. You know, really, with that in mind. Now, if I'm, you know, I get a better education because financially, that's going to help my kid. But, you know, I've always wanted to take a look at the statistics on how many kids who in the voluntary DSED program, one, got what they were supposed to, according to the model, was supposed to get. How many of those kids have matriculated on into college? And like you say, the byproduct of
is it working? Yeah, kind of thing.
Was it working type situation.
Did you ever upset other PHL coaches, though? Because they say, hey, man, that's a kid who'd be going to Beaumont or Sumner or Soldan, and now you took him from me. Did that happen?
Well, you know, I always felt like if you build a program worth kids coming, you know, that's on you. If you build it, they'll come. Now, I didn't literally just take players from, you know, I didn't put a gun to parents. Now, there are parents out there who
find a way to get their kid there.
Yeah. And can see without you. Now, I always told you, Martin, there's a method to my madness. You know, I never, when we played a game or we come out and we did what we did out on the court, it was not for the adults who were coming there, because they're going to come anyway. I felt like that was a portion for those little kids looking at our program.
They want to be a part.
To want to be a part one day. To want to be a part one day. So if that's recruiting, yes, I did in that aspect. I didn't tell a parent that they could not come. They're going to find a way. If you got a product, or you're producing, and you know winning. It deals with a lot of sins, as you would say, multitude. But when you're winning, people wants to be a part of that. You know, and I look at it in 35 years of coaching, and I told my son this the other day. I had one kid to transfer from my program to a county school in September, but in January, he was back. So that says something about your program.
Right.
And when the other coaches and when PHL coaches were talking, were doing this, that, and the other, I was telling them, you know, if stop making excuses. I never made an excuse about my players going anywhere. If they want to go, fine. Fortunately for me, they didn't want to go. But if you're losing players, it's got to be a reason why you're doing it. Take a look at yourself.
10 state titles. Tony's at 5. I think 4 with Vachon, 5 total. So look out. He's coming for the old man.
Oh, no
I think
doubt.
He's not. Let's finish with this. So the book's coming out. People that don't know you, hopefully they would read it. Or people that said, oh, I don't care for him, he's always been a pain in the ass or whatever. What would you hope they take out of it? Or people that say, oh, I don't like Floyd, what would you say to them or maybe make them understand you a little better? And this is funny because we've been round and round. We've been mad at each other. He was going to come on the show one night, then he didn't show up. And then we were fine. We're getting along. He's still coaching the V. And they win the team of the week at Fox 2. And it's like one of the pizza places. Papa John's or somebody sends over pizza for the whole team. And we would show up, myself and Maurice or Rob Desir, and we'd show up on like a Friday and hand out the pizzas. So the Vachon day, I said, I'm going to go down. I'm going to talk to Floyd. He's mad at me about something. I'm going to go, or whatever it was. And I walk in there, and the pizza guy had just arrived before me with one medium pizza. And they're supposed to, usually it's like 25, it's like ridiculous. These kids are just, and Floyd goes, I see how it is. And so I'm like, oh, I'll never live that down. I don't know how they screwed it up. The local chain or whatever franchise got it all mixed up and thought it was a pizza sent to the school instead of like 20 pizzas. And I walk in and there's Floyd and the whole team sitting there with one measly pizza. I said, oh, my God. I said, I will never live this down. But I interrupted my own question to you, though. What would you want people to take away from the book
and understand
better?
Hopefully – With the truth out there, they'll understand me instead of listening to what other people say. You know, form your own opinion. You know, you're able now to read something and to form your own opinion because it's coming out of my mouth. You know, when I said that, I didn't take things personal when it came to coaching. You know, I think that might have been one of my strong suits that I was able to, you know, have thick enough skin to let some things roll off my back. I would hope that my intent, that you're taking in the fact that, you know, I did whatever I could that I felt was in reason to develop a program that people, that would be a household name, I really love my players. You know, I did everything I could to try to help them. Because I built not only a program but a family, and I told my kids all the time that there are going to be people long time after you leave this program who you are going to hear about, and they're going to be talking about it. They'll still be talking about how we did this or how we have done that, and that they have to deal with it. But you know, the family, the door is always open for you as a family member to come back. So again, I would hope people try to understand that the method, that was a method to some of the madness that they might have visualized as being a madness.
Well, again, I said it at the beginning, but I think we could talk for a couple of hours. And as we finish the interview at the KTRS studios, thanks to Brendan Wiese being a part of it, and we sort of made this into our legend series on KTRS, but also a Kilcoyne conversation. Floyd and I have been talking about doing this for a while, but when it was over, we were talking, and I said, let's just meet at some point this summer with Floyd and his son, Tony, who's doing a great job at Vachon, and just, he's going to be a real leader in our community for a while. And Tony and Floyd, I said, let's get together, have some beers, tell some stories, because I think we could talk for a long time. And people who have been real high and then been real low tend to be fascinating people to talk to. So I'm looking forward to Floyd's book that's coming out. He mentioned it, Hard Court. And he said that does have a meaning because he was in court dealing with the federal government. And he was successful on the court coaching Vachon basketball. So looking forward to that book coming out. Thanks for checking it out. All of our interviews are posted at scoopswithdannymack.com. You can also subscribe, iTunes, Spotify, and if you can, subscribe. And then write a review. That always helps. I don't know all the metrics on it, but it's good if you can. So thanks for checking it out. And thanks to Appliance Discounters, one of our longtime loyal sponsors, theappliancediscounters.com, as well as Triad Bank, triadbanking.com, or see them in person in Frontenac on Clayton Road. And Marie Davila Senior Living, the home to Red Shandings for so many years. Been around since 1960, located at the corner of Clayton and Wideman Road. Take that virtual tour at mariedavilla.com. I'm Martin Kilcoyne. Thanks for checking out this visit. We'll talk to you again soon.